What's up, ladies and gentlemen? It's your one and only host, DJ Hamilton here at the DJ Sports Show. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you guys leave a like and subscribe. If you listen to audio platforms on all, make sure you leave a 5-star rating and share it with anybody you know who loves sports. I have a very special guest here as I'm here today in Manhattan. He doesn't really need an introduction, but I'm going to introduce him anyway. He's a 2023 NABJ Hall of Fame inductee, MLB Hall of Fame voter. He's a CEO of the MLBBro.com. You know, I'm out here representing. I know he's happy to see that.
No doubt.
Former ESPN Sports anchor of The First Take, current co-host of the Fox Sports show, The Odd Couple, and he was the first black columnist for the Detroit Free Press back in 1993, the one and only Rob Parker. How you doing today, Rob?
DJ, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate you. For real. Thank you.
I remember I had you on my radio show back in February before the Super Bowl, and man, I remember asking you, oh, Rob, I know you're coming to New York in April, mid-April. Oh, you think we could get an interview? I said, oh, maybe. We'll see what happens when it gets closer. And I didn't think it would happen. I was like, oh, let's see if we can make this a reality. And then here we are today.
I'm happy to be here. Proud of the work you're doing and the work you're putting in for your career, which is what you need to do. A lot of young guys think it happens overnight. It doesn't. Nope. You got to put the work in. So I'm proud of you.
Yeah, man. But first question, I always like to ask my guests when they come on the show so people know like your background. Where were you born and raised?
Born in Jamaica, Queens, at Queens General Hospital. And grew up in New York, went to high school in New York, Martin Van Buren High School. And, you know, I'm just a New Yorker for a long time. I've lived in Detroit for a long time. People think I'm from Detroit.
Yeah, that's what I used to think, too. And then I looked at him, I was like, oh, wait, he's from Queens.
Yeah, everybody thinks I'm from Detroit because I spent 20 years there and had a great career. I got married there. I got divorced there. You know, I own a barbershop there.
Yep.
I bought my first house there, all that stuff. So I have roots there. But, yeah, I'm from Jamaica, Queens.
So growing up in Jamaica, Queens, how would you describe it for somebody who's not really familiar with the area? And how did it help cultivate you into the young person, the man and person you became?
I feel like I'm very fortunate, like, when it comes to growing up. Because we grew up in a great neighborhood where we had, let me just tell you the history of the area where I live. So a lot of famous people used to live there in the day. In fact, if you leave our home, our old house, we don't own it anymore, and walk straight down the block, a long block, you will run into Babe Ruth's house, where Babe Ruth used to live in the 1920s. Brooke Benton, who was a soul singer, he lived in our neighborhood. Count Basie had a yard and a pool, and we used to swim in the pool over in the summertime.
Oh, nice.
Count Basie didn't own the house. He had already moved, but it was his old house. We called it Count Basie's house. Yeah. And if you guys Google Count Basie, you'll know who I'm talking about. It's very famous. So we lived in that neighborhood, and it was all private homes. Nobody lived in an apartment. I grew up with 10 other guys, so we had a baseball team called the Black Cats. Oh, nice. And all 11 of us played on this team. We all lived off of Sayers Avenue, and there were like three blocks that separated all these 11 guys, all within the same age range of 2 years. So we were brothers. We did everything together. We played baseball together. We went to movies together. We went out to eat together. So we were walking around as 11.
Dynamic duo.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It was 11 of us. And we had a 50-year friendship, and we just lost one of our friends this past year.
Oh,
so can you believe that from 1974 to 2024, there were 11 of us, and we spent 50 years together as friends. So I grew up with a strong bond, guys who looked out for each other and things like that. So I had a great childhood, to be honest, living up in Jamaica, Queens.
Yeah, you always got to keep the real ones close, man. They're hard to come by. They
absolutely, really, especially when you have friends who know you from day one. And, you know, and they just, they look out for you. Real friends look out for you.
They were there for you before the fame and all that.
You know, 100%.
You know, they're true friends. And they went through with you through adversity.
Good
and all
times,
that time,
bad times. Absolutely.
You keep those ones very close. So we all know you're a sports icon, personality. But where did it
all begin? I'm blushing. Okay.
Where did it all begin? What was the origins? Where did your love for sports begin? And did you play any sports growing up here in Queens?
Yeah, baseball was my true love. I was a baseball player, and that's where my love for the game is. I was that kid wearing a baseball cap, walking around, practicing like I'm pitching, like I was taking swings with an air bat. You know what I mean?
Just
I was all in. I read three newspapers every day as a kid. Yeah. I delivered the Long Island Press, which was a local newspaper. I read the Daily News in the morning. I read the, on my way to school, I read the New York Post on the way home, which was an afternoon paper back in the day. Yep. So I was one of these kids, 9, 10 years old, reading 3 newspapers a day. It was a lot. Nobody in my family's in the media or in the business, but there was something about it. And I think the name of our radio show is The Odd Couple, me and Chris Broussard.
Yeah, we're going to get into that later.
Yeah, right? But it was a TV show called The Odd Couple that used to come on. That was from the 70s. And I watched that show religiously. I loved it. It was a sitcom. But Oscar Madison was a sports writer in this show. It was about two divorced guys who lived together. One was sloppy, one was neat. And their lives always collided. And I looked at Oscar Madison and I said, man, he has a great job. He's a sports writer. He has his picture in the paper. He travels around to all the games. You know what I mean? And writes about it. I was like, that's the job I want when I grow up. Yep. So I was like, on one hand, I wanted to be a professional baseball player, but I said, what would be my backup plan if I don't make it? I'm not good enough.
Exactly.
And then that's where being a sports writer came into. And I'll give you one other story. When I was in second grade, so I was 7 years old, I had a teacher. Her name was Miss Noble. And one day she pulled me aside from the rest of the class and she said to me, Robert, I want you to know you're an excellent writer. And when you grow up, you should be a writer. So she identified me at 7 years old as
foreshadowed.
Yes. Yep. And so I kept that in the back of my head. And that's where that whole dream of, if I can't play baseball, maybe I could write about it. And that's how it came about.
And she really manifested there. She really did.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
That's kind of similar to me. Like growing up, basketball was my favorite sport, as you know. NBA, I was like, oh, I want to be in the NBA. I used to always work on my game, countless hours working on drills. I was doing drills no other kids were doing. I was throwing the ball up in the air, swatting the shot, working on blocking shots. I used to drop the ball and work on swiping it under, because, you know, when you swipe under, you're not going to get called for a foul as much.
Right.
So you're going to mostly touch the ball. So those are things I would do. I was thinking differently from other kids. I was just always outside park. My godmother, mom used to be like, yo, DJ, why are you outside? It's 100 degrees outside. Get inside.
Right.
Sweating too much. Because, yeah, you do the laundry. So, yeah, exactly. I know what you mean. And then I adjusted. I was like, oh, high school, tore my ACL. And I said, okay, I need to think about
sports. What else
sports.
Can you do? Right.
Yeah, I need a backup. I was like, my passion sports. Let me do sports writing. So I looked at what degree I need. From high school, junior year, I made up my mind.
And that was it.
Yep. Communication media. So next question. You've had a tremendous career in sports, which we're going to get into a little bit later. But you attended college at Southern Connecticut, where you got your BS, and then your master's degree at Columbia University, where you honed your reporting and journalism skills. How profound an impact did those places have on you, not just as a reporter burgeoning into the sports media field, but growing into a young man?
Well, for me at Southern Connecticut, what was fantastic about the school was Division II, but they had a good journalism program, and that's how I wound up there. I read a magazine that had schools with good journalism programs, and Southern Connecticut was in it. It wasn't that far from New York. I wanted to go away for college. I didn't want it to be too expensive. Yeah. So it fit, checked a lot of boxes. Yep. So I was like, Southern Connecticut makes sense. So that's how I wound up there. And I went there with the idea of being a sports writer, but I left there with the tools and the skills. When I graduated from college, I had 5 opportunities and job offers waiting for me as a reporter. And that tells you about, you know, what I was able to learn there and grow and put clips together and learn how to write. And so I honestly left, like, I went to school with this dream, and when I left, I actually had the skills to get a job, and that's really how Southern impacted me. As far as Columbia amped it up a notch and taught me about digging a little bit deeper into journalism and not just being surfacey on what it takes to be really one of the best in the game. And you know Columbia, Ivy League, one of I think it's the best journalism school in the country. There are a lot of good ones, but I think Columbia is. And I remember I had a teacher, her name was Joanna Lee, and she was a small woman. And she called me into her office. And at that time, I was a sports writer for the Daily News here in New York. Mm-hmm. So I was 24, I already at the biggest paper in the country, but I was going to Columbia Journalism School. And she told me that she wasn't going to allow me to skate, that I was way ahead of my classmates, and she wanted me to do more. So she came up behind me. She pretended like she had a knife in her hand, and she stuck me in the back. And she said, I want you to take the knife, stick it in, turn it, and draw blood. I want you to work harder than everybody. I want you to dig deeper than everybody. I want you to really you know, go for it and not just be surfacey and skating on your talent that you obviously have. And that changed my life. That made me the reporter and the columnist that I have been, because, you know, I'm always trying to stick the knife in and turn it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my peers in journalism, you know, they used to always say, Rob, you're the nicest guy in the world. But when I read your column, man, you are ruthless, man. You are something.
Unapologetic.
Yeah. And so they started kidding me, and they always say, my little thing that I said I'm going to put on my grave, my tombstone or whatever, will be, if I'm writing, I'm ripping. So that's kind of my,
that's a good one.
My tag. If I'm writing, I'm ripping.
Oh yeah. I always knew you were a little comedian too. So you got your first big break starting out at small local newspapers such as the NY Daily News, as you mentioned, as a sports reporter. You were the first black columnist for the Detroit Free Press back in 1993. Wrote for Newsday, Detroit News, and so forth. How did those opportunities help build your confidence and helping you realize this career could be a reality for you?
Well, getting the job to this day, and I've had a lot of great jobs, you know, ESPN, Fox, all these other places, Fox Sports Radio. But being the first black sports columnist in Detroit is probably the greatest job I ever got, because no one black had ever had that position. When the paper hired me in 1993, it was 161 years old. Think about that. Think about Detroit as a black city, 83% black, and no black person ever had that job. So I held that as a accomplishment, but also I took it on as, this is my duty to do it right, to give other people an opportunity, because they'll see that, hey, a guy can do this job. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to represent Detroit and its fans. And I think that's why people really think I was from Detroit, because that's how I embraced it. I never looked at it as, it's just a job. I'm from New York. I don't care what goes on in Detroit. That wasn't the way. I wore it on my sleeve. I was always looking out for the Detroit fan.
That's amazing. So your TV career, you were going to continue progressing your media career, getting on TV, working for WIV TV in Detroit, and also ESPN, where you started in 2003. I did the research. So you'll be on shows such as First Take with guys like Skip Bayless and your good friend Stephen A. Smith, such as First Take, Undisputed, Fox Sports later on, Numbers Never Lie on ESPN with Michael Smith, and so
and
on
Jamel
and so
Hill.
Forth. Yep. And you also make frequent appearances on The Herd with Colin Cowherd. What is it like working on television that differs from radio, and how would you describe your time at ESPN?
ESPN was tremendous. I mean, I was in on the ground floor of the debate TV, you know, wave.
Yeah.
Because there are only three of us who have been on all the three big debate shows. And that's Cold Pizza, which was the first, where we should do segments inside of Cold Pizza called First and Ten.
Yep.
And it was me, Chris Broussard, and Skip Bayless. Those are only three. So we were on that show, Cold Pizza. We were on First Take, and we were on Undisputed. So the three of us are the only three that connect all those shows together.
Yep.
And so I do feel like I was in on the ground floor of it, enjoyed every minute of it. I worked at ESPN for 8 years. I always say I worked there, had 8 great years minus one day.
Yeah.
And that's really how I look at it, because I never really had any issues there. People love my work. I was on different shows. I enjoyed my time there. I don't have really a negative. It didn't end the way I wanted it to end, but it still doesn't take away. You don't erase 8 great years for one situation. And you know, that didn't work out. And then you wind up going to Fox, and I think my career has taken off even more so. You know what I mean? So things happen sometimes, and it's not about the moment or the circumstances, how you rebound. How do you take a situation that doesn't work out for you and build and make it even better? And I think I've done that.
Like how you reinvent yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. How would you describe the difference between radio and television?
And the television is a little more like, you know where you're going because it's more scripted.
Yeah.
But still, we're not reading a teleprompter. You know what I mean? It's coming off the top of our heads. But you got to be prepared a little bit more from that standpoint. Radio is about, we could go into a topic with something and something can trigger me, and then I could go off on a different tangent or a different take on something. And some of those are great. And it comes from just my knowledge, and then something triggers me in that argument. Chris Broussard might say something that really makes me mad or makes me energized.
See it all the time, yeah.
Or makes me want to, you know what I mean? And then we'll go off on each other. But the thing about it is we have a lot of respect for each other, even when we disagree. And it's sports. It's not life or death. And we never take it personal. We've known each other since 1992 for a long time. So, you know, even if we yell at each other and you might be watching on YouTube, don't think that we're going to be fighting after the show.
Yeah.
It's not going to be that.
This brother's doing their job.
Exactly.
And that goes right into my next question. So you currently work at the Fox Sports Radio show, The Odd Couple, with your co-host Chris Broussard, a good friend of both of ours. What was your relationship like with Chris, and where did the Odd Couple idea come from, which you kind of mentioned earlier, but dive into it more a little
so,
bit.
So Chris and I, obviously, we're both on a newspaper trail. Chris was working in Cleveland and Akron and whatnot. And when he met me, I was a beat writer covering the Cincinnati Reds for the Cincinnati Inquirer. And back then it was a big deal because there was only two black baseball writers in the entire country. So when he met me, you know, it was like, wow, he covers baseball. You know, there were a lot of young black writers at that time who were looking up to me like, oh, you know, like he's got a major beat at a big paper, you know, a bigger paper. And so we became friendly. And it's like a fraternity because there's so few of us. You get to know everybody. You travel the country, NBA finals, all the writers are together. When I covered the NBA, so we would sit at tables 20 deep, and it would be everybody from all over the country. Mike Wilbon covering the Washington Bullets, you know what I mean? And every writer's from all different cities. And then the Odd Couple was our boss, Don Martin. He heard us together on Chris's podcast. He had a basketball podcast. So he heard us, and Chris and I were working at Fox Sports Radio. We had a weekend show, but it was separate. I was on a show with a guy, Mark Willard, and Chris was on a show with Mark Willard on another day. Mm. So we weren't together.
Yeah.
So Don Martin listened to the podcast, and he went to our programmer, Scott Shapiro, and said, man, these guys are really good. They should be on together. Why are we having them separate? So it was his idea to put us together. We did a show on a Sunday for about 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
And then they graduated us to a daily national show. And we are the Odd Couple. We really are. Yeah. And so, you know, the name comes from the TV show, The Odd Couple. But Chris and I are two different people.
Personalities.
Yeah, we're just different, you know. And so, you know, when you hear the open and, you know, it's like, Chris is married with two kids and Rob's divorced and no kids. Yeah. And Chris is at church on Sunday and I'm in the strip club on late Saturday night. It really is.
It really is the Odd Couple.
Yeah, we're the Odd Couple. So it's natural. People seem to love it.
And it's genuine.
And it's genuine. It's not forced where we're trying to get Chris to be something he's not, or you're asking me to be somebody different than I really am. So it's a real energy, real synergy, and the show is both fun and informative, and I think that's why we've had success.
Yeah. This quick story, get to the next question. I actually met Chris on my flight back from L.A. last August, coming back from vacation with my cousin, and that's how I met him. And it was it wasn't planned or anything. Coming back from the plane, going up flight, and Chris, we meet. And then I was like, oh my God, that's Chris Broussard. And then he sits down, and I'm like, Chris Broussard? And he's like, hey, young fella, nice to meet you. Shakes his hand, all that. And I was like, wow. And then we just talked about life, talked about sports, showed him my stuff. And he was genuinely impressed. And he was like, hey, young fella, I'm really impressed by your work. I have my guy, Rob Parker, right for LB Bro. I see you like to write about baseball too. I said, yeah, I'm open-minded. And then that's how I met Chris. And then he even gave me his email and phone number. I was like, wow. Like, I didn't ask for it, nothing. He was just so impressed with my work. And then that's how, you know, eventually met. If I don't meet Chris, I don't meet you. This, like, if that flight was 1 hour later, 1 hour
or
earlier.
Or something, right. That's how life
Chris.
Is.
It's funny how life works. It really is. It really is.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So you are one of the greatest sports media talents of all time and a trailblazer, but you're also a businessman. You created MLBBro.com, a website covering black and brown American baseball players. Make sure you guys go check it out, by the way, which I'm honored to be a writer for. What was the idea behind creating that, and what are your long-term goals for the site as you continue to grow and progress?
Yeah, it was the idea that there are black players who we don't know a lot about. Like, and you know baseball, I love baseball. I'm a Hall of Fame voter.
Yep.
I think baseball is a part of the black community, part of our fabric. And sometimes I think we lose sight of that, and we can't let that go. We can't, all the history that we have in baseball. We didn't start in baseball till 1947, and look at all the records that black players hold. We have a big stake in the game, And I think that I felt like we were losing a little bit of that, where people were just talking about football and basketball. And so I want to make sure that the young people understand our history, don't forget it, and there are other options. Everybody can't play in the NBA. There are only 400 jobs. And as more and more happens, look at the Europeans taking over the NBA. So that was part of it. And the other part of it is, so promoting the game of baseball in our community. Mm-hmm. But the other part is, like, young writers like you being able to help to develop the future baseball writers, broadcasters, content creators, editors, and stuff like that. And so I hope to leave a trail behind of guys like you who can learn how to do this and then maybe have a career of this down the road. So there's opportunity for everybody.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm really honored to be on your website, MB Bro. Really am.
We started 4 years ago with 14 people. We have 80 now, and just a lot of young guys like you, young guys and girls. I love it.
You're a great example for me. One day, DJ Sports Show, hopefully that can happen. So we'll see. So you also have a barbershop and Sporty Cuts, for your owner as well.
What 22 years.
Yeah, 22 years.
Barbershop. Yep. And just my barber and I were talking one day, and he wanted to open up a barbershop. I wanted to open up one, so we decided to do it together.
Wow.
We felt like he had the know-how in the barber, and I could help to promote it, push it out there because of my sports background, my television and TV presence in Detroit. And so we built a tremendous barbershop that's doing really well and something that I'm very proud of, the barbershop.
What advice would you give young aspiring entrepreneurs who are trying to create, start, or grow their own business?
I think it's important. You can work for corporate America, but it's also great to have your own. And that's what I've always done. I had a sports bar as well downtown Detroit. I owned a hot dog restaurant. I was always looking to take my money and invest in myself. And I think not too many people do that, and that's a mistake. You know, you're willing to go spend money and pay help other people in their businesses by buying their stuff, but you won't take your money and invest in yourself.
Yeah.
Most people won't do it, and I've always been felt like I wanted to invest in myself, so I've always been an entrepreneur trying to do new things.
Yeah, I invested in myself coming here definitely today, that's for sure. So you teach a baseball course at USC. Well, what made you want to start a baseball course at USC and to inspire the next generation?
That was it, to inspire the next generation and to also bridge the gap so that young writers are more versatile.
Yep.
It's one thing if you know one sport, that's cool. But when you first start out in a business, you're not going to be an expert in any business, in any sport.
Exactly.
So you need to be versatile. If I'm interviewing for a job and you come in and you say you only know the NBA and you come to Boston and you're a general assignment reporter, I can't hire you because I can't send you to a Red Sox game. You don't know anything about baseball.
Yeah.
I can't send you to a Boston Bruins game because you don't know anything about hockey.
Yep.
But if another guy comes in and he knows all these sports and you only know one or two, which guy are you going to hire?
Exactly.
You're going to hire the guy who knows more than one or two, right?
Brings more value to your company.
Absolutely. Yep. So the more you know, the more valuable you are. So that was my selling point to USC about the baseball writing. You don't have to become a baseball expert, but you have to be you have to know enough so that we could at least you could go to a baseball game, do a sidebar or do a story if they need you to go do something.
Mm, definitely a good point. So you've accomplished a lot in your career, but one of the biggest accomplishments had to be when you were a 2023 NABJ Hall of Fame inductee. For those of you who don't know, that's the National Association of Black Journalists, one of the greatest black journalists of all time right here. What was your reaction when you got the invite that you were getting inducted to the Hall of Fame? And what was your feelings going through the motions?
Crazy. I was at the airport in Atlanta, and I was about to get on the plane, and I see a number that I don't recognize, and I normally don't answer calls that because I just think they're spam or whatever. Something made me answer the phone. I have no idea. I couldn't tell you why.
That was God talking to you that day.
I answered the phone, and there's a woman on the other end. She says, "Hey, I'm so-and-so from the NABJ," and I'm still not clicking. And she said, "I want to say congratulations. You've been inducted into the NABJ Hall of Fame."
Wow.
Silence for like 5 seconds because I thought about it. I'm like, I know my hair is gray, but am I that old? So I was like, wow, that's unbelievable.
Oh, man.
And then the ceremony was down in Birmingham this past summer. It was tremendous. A lot of my mentees were there for me. And I know you saw my speech where I thank those guys because they fuel me. You know that, the young guys and girls in this business, they really do. So it's quite an honor to be recognized by your peers and by your people as one of the best to do it. So it's something that's near and dear to my heart.
That's amazing, man. Hopefully reach your level one day. We'll see. But Rob, what advice would you give to young people, just as myself, trying to break into the sports media industry, trying to get their foot into the door? And how would you tell them to deal with adversity and naysayers, such as, for example, you had the RG3 situation in 2012. How would you tell them to go about that?
Well, I'll say this. First, RG3, just address. Things happen. You know, when you're doing this and you're doing live television, everybody's not going to agree with your opinion and stuff. And it's a circumstance or a situation, but I don't dwell on it. Yeah. It's not who I am. Mm-hmm. It's just a part of my story, but it's not my story.
Exactly.
So you have to always believe in yourself, you know, that those things can happen.
Yeah.
And there's still space for you to bounce back from adversity. And always believe in yourself, no matter what. One door closes, there's another one that opens up. Somebody else sees the talent in you. But if you don't believe in yourself, no one's going to believe in you.
Exactly.
So you got to be confident. And remember, the business weeds out a lot of people. People don't get their job right out of college. They go, oh, I'm going to go to insurance business. I'm going to go get this 9-to-5 and make my bread or whatever.
Yeah.
And then that's the end of their dream. So the business works like that, where they weed out a lot of people who aren't willing to fight for it. If you're not willing to work on weekends, if you're not willing to work at night, if you're not willing to do any of those things, you won't succeed. And everybody who's ever done it, you have to do that. Make a commitment to it. Say to yourself, this is really what I want to do in life, and own it. And that's really what it comes down to. People who think you're going to get out of college and wind up on First Take at 22.
Yeah, it's not realistic.
It's just not going to happen.
It's not realistic.
It's just not realistic.
You got to go through growing pains.
Yes, you got to grow. You got to become work at newspapers, cover, you know, or websites. Cover different sports.
Do internships,
all that kind of stuff to build some credibility on why is your opinion valid? Why should I listen to you? And it takes time to build that.
Yeah.
Everybody you see on TV, Stephen A. was a newspaper columnist. Skip Bayless was a newspaper columnist. Jermell Hill was a newspaper columnist. Michael Smith, newspaper columnist.
Yeah, I know all these people,
Mike Wilbon, newspaper columnist. I could just go on and on and on. Chris Broussard worked in the newspaper business, was a magazine writer for ESPN, the magazine. Mm-hmm. I was a columnist. Everybody, they all cut their teeth, being beat writers, covering teams, graduating to being columnists, having an opinion, and that's how it's done.
Mm, that's amazing. So I only have two more questions for you. Who do you like to see on the DJ Sports Show? But you have to help me get them on the show. I have two people on mine.
Chris Broussard. We'll get Chris Broussard on.
Hey, Chris, we already got contact with you. We're in a group chat. Hey, we're going to make it happen, brother. I know you're going to see this too.
Yes, Chris will do it. We'll get Chris on it.
Yeah, and then I have one in mind. It might be a long shot, but he's a good friend of yours.
Stephen A.?
Yep.
Okay, I'll talk to him.
Yep.
You know that.
If you could show this to him too, I'd be like, oh, who's this brother?
Okay.
I know his voice. You know, brother. Yeah, so
we can make that.
I'll come out to Queens too. I'll come to the city. Yeah, make it happen. It's worth it. Yeah, you got to invest in yourself, like you said.
100%.
Yeah.
And you've done that.
And the last question, I always love to close out with this question with my guests. When people think of the name Rob Parker, what do you want your legacy to be?
It's pretty simple, that he made a way for other people to do what he did. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And that's what MLB Bro is. I know you didn't mention it, but I'm starting in the first all-black sports talk radio station in Detroit called Sports Rap Radio. We kick off May 16th.
Make sure you guys tune in for that.
May 16th, which will be a historic day in our culture to have a sports talk radio station with our voice to tell our story. Mm-hmm. So those are the opportunities I'm always trying to build and make so that we can do this. And it could be a young guy like DJ who can sit back and go, hey, I want to have a talk show. I want to write for the newspaper or for the website, and know that there are people who look like him that have done it before, and gives him confidence that he can do it. So that's all I want people to remember me by.
And that's surreal, Rob. I know you do comedy. Before, you want to close out with a joke?
You going to put me on a spot like that?
Hey, he does comedy too, people. I just want to see if he got a little funny joke.
Okay, so people don't know this, but DJ and I, is this PG or can I?
Go ahead, man.
All right. DJ and I, we went to the movies and see a movie. And the woman we bought our tickets, the woman, she you know, ripped out tickets to walk in, and she said, all right, you guys, make sure you hold on to your stub. And DJ walked in like this.
Ladies and gentlemen, the legendary sports personality and Hall of Fame black journalist, Rob Parker. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, DJ.